why didn't we go first?
Because, yeah, you got it on? Okay, the Economic Development Budget Division will come to order for Monday, March 10th. Senator Dibble, I think we can do your bill real quickly, because all we have to do is move it to finance.
Okay.
Okay, and so, that was heard here before, as you all remember, and we have a quorum, so we can make a motion that Senate File 2772, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Committee on Finance. Senator Dibble?
Aye.
I think we took out the bonding part of it, is what we did before.
Right.
And now this is, this policy left, if I'm not mistaken.
So, Mr. Chair, so would the entire Section 3, starting on page 4, be deleted from the bill, except for the effective date?
I think we deleted something from, what did we delete the last time? Yeah, we deleted that the last time we were...
Okay, so just the policy piece.
Just the policy.
All right. I'll make that motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 2772, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Senator Higgins, welcome to the committee.
One down.
It's great to be back.
I owe you one.
Mr. Chair, I have Senate File 3073. This is one of the bills that's working its way through the legislature this year to help folks who are trying to avoid foreclosure on their home. The Minnesota Housing Finance Agency has a no-interest deferred loan program. In current statute, it has a hard cap on the dollar amount of financial assistance that is available to folks, and it's gotten to be a very obsolete amount of money. No longer are people's monthly payments what they used to be, and so this bill would actually set up a formula that would ebb and flow to set up the size of the deferred loan. And assistance is intended to help people who've gotten behind on their mortgages, but that once the amount that's overdue is paid up, they can keep up with their mortgage. They work through this through the foreclosure prevention counselors that we have here in the state. And I think I'm babbling, so I think I will just stop talking. And Ms. Orr from the Housing Finance Agency is here.
Ms. Orr.
As well.
Can you explain what Senator Higgins just tried to explain?
What she refers to.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Tanya Orr with Housing Finance Agency. The legislature appropriates money to a foreclosure prevention and assistance program, about $1 million for the biennium. That program funds two sorts of activities. One is counseling to help people figure out whether they can stay in their home, to work with lenders, to talk them into some sort of repayment plan. The other part of the other activity that gets funded under this program is financial assistance for people who have fallen behind due to a loss of a job or something like that. But who, if they could get caught up, can afford the monthly payments on an ongoing basis going forward. What we've found and what we've heard from counselors recently is that we last increased this, I think, in 2001, the cap, which is $5,500, 6 months at a max, 6 months of your mortgage payment plus taxes and insurance, or $5,500 is the maximum. This $5,500 cap has proven to be a barrier to helping a lot of people, because most people who get into foreclosure have taken a loan in the last 3 years. Well, if you bought your house in the last 3 years, house prices have gone up a lot. Your monthly payment is not what, you know, my monthly payment is, because I bought my house 20 years ago. So they're not able to help people who could afford their mortgage but have gotten behind, because $5,500 isn't enough to catch them up. So what we're suggesting is, rather than us coming back every 3 years and saying, you know, the cap's not right, that we have a cap, but that it be geared towards What we know from the census data is the median monthly owner costs multiplied by 6, and we're actually talking about proposing it be 110% of the median because people who are in foreclosure or at risk of foreclosure tend to be the people who have very recent mortgages. So the bill really just replaces a dollar amount with a formula for a cap. This year, the cap, the formula were in place, the cap would be about $10,000 in the metro area and about $9,000 in greater Minnesota. And then again, that is based on census data, the American Community Survey.
So were we ahead of our time when we had this bill passed way back in 2001?
Mr. Chair, Minnesota has been a leader in providing foreclosure prevention assistance. Pennsylvania does it, but a lot of states have not funded this in the past. And we actually have been – it's been a very successful program. And it's been so successful, actually, that Marquette Bank recently gave us $500,000 for financial assistance, recognizing that this was one of the ways that people need help in foreclosures. We also recently received an award of federal money and received more than sort of our state proportion for foreclosure prevention counseling because we have such a good network in place.
And is this a one-time one-time amount of money that somebody can get in the event that they have, or is it, it doesn't happen, they can't get the $5,500 every year.
No, Mr. Chair, this is a one-time, we hope that we've thought about, that the counselors will have determined that if a family can't stay in their house, they're not going to give them the money. So it has to resolve the emergency.
Okay. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Did you tell us how much money that was? And I didn't. You've got a blank appropriation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandeveer, it's we get a state appropriation of about $1.1 million, 50% for the biennium. 50% of that money is for financial assistance and 50% is for counseling. So it's about $567,000.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, you're not asking for any more money.
No. We're living within the appropriation that we have. We're just suggesting that some people could use a little bit more of that money.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the committee?
Let's go to Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman, members, there's a fiscal note being copied. Senator Higgins had asked for that, and it's just being copied now. That shows that there's no additional request in this.
Chairman, I'll move the bill.
Senator Metzen moves that Senate file number 3073 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Any further discussion? No, it doesn't say anything, right?
Well, it does, but it doesn't ask for money.
Does anybody want to see the fiscal note before we vote?
Just say zero.
Seeing no objections, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, motion is adopted.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Kubley.
It's time I'm just going to shut up and recommend it to pass the finance.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Chair and members. Senate File 2538 came about, I guess I could give you just a little bit of background on it. Bonding bill had visited the city of Nassau. It's a small community on the western edge of the state. And we had visited there with the bonding committee to look at their fire hall. The fire hall is actually so short that they can't buy a new fire truck because it won't fit in the building. You know, their fire truck is older than some of you are. I wasn't referring to you, Mr. Chair, but we have some younger members.
Well, I'm one of the younger ones on this committee. Oh.
Well, I don't think we'll let it register to vote, so we won't have to worry. But anyway, you know, this appropriation, Senator Langseth had suggested that we bring the bill to this committee and seek funding here. And I know funding is tight, Mr. Chair, and yet this isn't a lot of money either. But, you know, we'd certainly appreciate any consideration. And with me today is Brad Stryker, the fire chief in Nassau, and he'd like to share a little bit about the handout that you're receiving on this project.
Welcome, Mr. Stryker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brad Strike. I am the fire chief in Nassau, Minnesota. She's handing out, we've got some pictures and stuff. With the bonding bill project that we were looking at previously and stuff, we were looking at a $250,000 grant on the bonding bill and $250,000 that we were going to have to do on our own. And with our department, and the area that we cover, which is 45 square miles that we cover with our fire department. We have 17 members. And like Gary said, the trucks that we have basically barely fit in to the building and stuff. We'd like to get some different trucks, keep updated to newer standards and stuff, but without doing anything with a fire hall. We cannot do that, and we physically could not afford to come up with $250,000. And that's when they came with this proposal to us and stuff about $125,000. It won't complete a building for us, but it would give us a really good start and try and cut our expenses and stuff that we have. The area that we cover is approximately 250 people live in the complete area and stuff, and probably a third of those are elderly. The area that we cover, all of our water is hauled from reservoirs and waters. We have to pump it out of creeks and streams. We don't have the fire hydrants and stuff. So we just are looking at this to where if we can take and get a start on a building and stuff, we can upgrade our equipment and get some better equipment so that we have more room to work and pick up some more firemen and stuff and have more place for their gear.
You know, Senator Kubley, I missed this on the bonding tour, but I really heard a lot of things about it. For $250,000, I probably heard more about this than I did from the $10 million project, to tell you the honest. You guys need it badly, I know.
The need is pretty great there, Mr. Chair, so thank you for that.
Does Mr. Barrett or Mr. Wilding want to say anything? Do you want to say anything, or you just... No? Okay. Are there any questions or comments from the committee? The pictures are pretty self-explanatory, I think. You know, so you haven't been out there, and you understand that they're getting water from the creek and from the lakes. It's a pretty interesting setup. They need some help. So this, what's the issue on the bonding? Is the bonding money for?
Mr. Chairman, this project could be bonded, but in the past we have not bonded for fire stations on a regular basis. So I think Senator Langseth said he would rather not have it in the bonding bill.
Yeah, that's true, Mr. Chair. When Senator Langseth suggested that we bring the project here, he said it was a whole new category of bonding, and he didn't really want to go down that path, and so
that makes sense.
You know, just because of the limits on this year's bonding bill, too, that it's you know, had some constraints on it already.
Okay. Are there any questions of Senator Kubley or of the fire chief? Okay, seeing none, then Senator Kubley moves that Senate File 2538 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Are we keeping it here? Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Maybe I'll take that one back.
Is he here?
Senator Dibble. Senator Senjum, are you here? Where are you?
Yeah, he's right there. Behind the pole.
Oh, behind the pole there. Okay, all right. Senator Senjum, come on up here. Welcome to the committee. Senate File 3222.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Senate File 3222 has to do with a program called LifeTrack. It's a program that has been around for a while in the Twin Cities. We're looking through this bill to expand it to Rochester, as we have opportunities there with respect to programs that would assist immigrants and others that are new to our community immerse and become productive citizens within the community. And this particular kind of program has been shown, at least in the Twin City area, to grow a long way towards doing that. So, Mr. Chairman, members, without ado, I think I'll just turn it over to my witnesses. And I have names here. Erin Lindsay. Are you Erin?
Erin Lindsay.
Erin, I'm sorry. Erin Lindsay, Mr. Chairman and members.
Erin, welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
State your name for the record.
My name is Erin Lisney, and I work with LifeTrack Resources as a program manager. As you may know, last year the legislature provided funding for a one-year pilot project in Rochester. I apologize that Carrie Blair will not be able to testify today, but I will be speaking on behalf of both of our agencies. LifeTrack Resources partnered with the agency Intercultural Mutual Assistance Association in Rochester for this very successful project to provide employment assistance for legal immigrants and refugees. In the past 5 years, Rochester has seen a large influx of refugees and serves one of the largest populations of refugees in the state of Minnesota. Through this pilot project over the past 7 months, IMAA has had the opportunity to serve refugees and immigrants with employment challenges living in the Rochester area. This program is unique because we are able to offer one-on-one employment assistance to individuals that in the past have not been able to get service. We also have the ability to assist them in working through any barriers that exist by referring them to other resources within the community if need be. This is a great opportunity for our agency and the clients we serve, as well as a benefit to the overall community and the employers that we build relationships with. Our results have been remarkable. Our one-year pilot project provided us with funding to help serve 30 individuals. During the past 7 months, because there is such a strong demand for this program, we have exceeded our annual goals and helped 48 individuals get jobs, which is 160% of our annual goal. Investing in immigrants pays. Helping refugees and legal immigrants assimilate into the workforce provides immediate returns on investment. New workers reduce their need for public assistance, earn wages, pay taxes, and invest in their communities. Over the past 7 months, we have helped 14 people get off of MFIP. If these same 14 families would have stayed on MFIP for this year, it would have cost the state of Minnesota more than $209,000. We hope that you will strongly consider refunding this project. It has been tremendously successful and has benefited many legal, immigrant, and refugee families. This funding will allow our agency to serve clients, provide training and education, as well as provide a diverse workforce to area employers. Thank you very much.
Oh. Chairman and members,
Senator Senjum, we're just talking about the one-time pilot project. Sounds like it's pretty successful, and you may want to do this as an ongoing project instead of a one-time thing if it continues to be successful.
But I'll leave that up to you. Well, that's an invitation, Mr. Chairman.
I'll leave that up to you.
Building tails already.
Well, it sounds like, how much did you you told me you just saved $200,000, right?
$209,000.
That's not a tail. That's a savings.
Well, you said make it an ongoing program.
Well,
that's
if she's
talking
saving,
tails.
For $75,000, if she's saving $214,000, that's a big number. We're making all like bandits on that. No, that's not a tail.
Government bandits are managing that.
Chair, we do have Rochester. Some people don't look at it this way, but frankly, 11% of our community is
Benjamin, before you go any further, can you kind of rein in your own members here? Who are, or, you know,
she has seniority. I can't.
I do have.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me just finish. Rochester is 11% of Rochester is actually born outside of this country, and so we do have a lot of immigrants. People don't often think of us in that fashion, but nearly 11,000 people reside in Rochester, according to the last census, that were, in fact, born outside the United States. So.
And those are the ones you know about, huh?
Well, I can't say that.
Senator Vandeveer,
do you? Mr. Chair, we do hear a lot about Rochester from Senator Senjum, but all of it good. But if we had all the money that I heard we were going to save since I got here, boy, we wouldn't be worrying about $1 billion right now.
That's right. Mr. Chairman and members, I can understand
his
comment.
They're not all this successful. I'm sorry, go ahead. I shouldn't have to defend your bill for you.
Well, I mean, Mr. Chair, members, putting people to work is, you know, the secret of our society. That's what we want, and this thing has, frankly, proved to be very successful in that regard. And so, you know, in all seriousness, a little investment here has led to a downstream effect where we've got people working, bringing in checks, paying taxes, and working towards, you know, America's goals. So.
You have another witness?
We want. She said she's here for information, right?
Diana's lost her voice, she's just here for support if I have any need for help.
He needs a couple members to lose their. No. Anyway, okay, any further comments or questions on this? Okay, this goes to finance also, I take it.
Right? So you need them all. Vandeveer likes this one.
Yeah.
Oh, he doesn't like it. I'll move it because Vandeveer doesn't have
interest. I was going to move it, Mr. President.
Were you?
Yeah.
Let Vandeveer move it.
But then I've reached my cap for the day of spending money.
For the year.
No, well, today I have my Tomasoni glasses on, so I got
Yeah. Did you hear what he said?
No, I stopped paying attention to these guys after they're trying to kill someone.
When I started talking, as usual.
Okay, Senator Vandeveer moves it. Senate file. What is this?
But that is
322.
Letter to the editor.
20 years younger than the rest of us.
3222 be recommended to pass be referred to the Committee on Finance. Senator Senjum, just so you know, we might need to pull this back here just in case we need to have a committee bill. So this,
okay.
This could be a vehicle for us. Okay. All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Okay. I think
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Is pinch hitting for Senator Wong.
Stop shooting that's if you don't like me, just.
No, I don't. I just missed.
Just eject me.
Yeah.
Senator Dibble, since you're pinch hitting, you can say as little or as much as you want.
Mr. Chair, it's a great bill. We should pass it. We were joking about that before.
Aye.
Okay. Mr. Chair, this is Senate File 2643, Senator Moss bill. And there is a delete all amendment, the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Can we see? This is putting the bill in the form that the author would like it. Is that my understanding?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Did you get it from Sheila?
It's the bill.
Senator Fischbach, will you move the A1 amendment? This puts it in the form the author would like it. This will be the bill we'll be working off of. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, motion is adopted.
I could have moved it, Mr. Chair. I'm a
member. I was thinking, he's doing the bill. He's a member of the committee.
That's fine. I want Senator Fischbach to be on record.
I like Senator Fischbach on this bill. All right. Senator Dibble.
Mr. Chair and members, what this bill seeks to do now is to set up a working group to take a look at some issues and some possibilities around helping folks who are in foreclosure crisis, and it looks to work with community land trust organizations. There's a handout in your packet about what community land trusts are. But in summary, community land trusts are a way of providing affordable home ownership and hanging on to a good deal of, or at least a portion of, that public investment that goes to building that affordable housing that, that people own. And the way that that happens is the property, the land underlying the actual housing units, continue to be held in trust. That's the land trust. And the purchaser, the home buyers, own the actual house in which they live, so that at the time that the house is sold, when they're ready to move on to bigger and better things or different setting, the homeowners can realize a portion of the value increase. They can realize some equity, some return to their investment in equity. But the underlying land continues to be held in trust, and that continues to maintain a level of affordability. So that's a land trust in short. What this proposal does is sets up this working group, and you can see the composition in Section 1, Subdivision 1, members of the legislature, the commissioner of the Department of Revenue, and then 12 public members with various backgrounds and experience, folks familiar with land trusts, mortgage foreclosure prevention service providers, bankers, folks who have been affected by the foreclosure crisis, and public or legal aid attorneys. And they would look at three things very quickly, and then I'll allow my testifiers to explain in a little more detail. Taking a look at 501c3 bonds, allowing the community land trusts to take advantage of and make use of 501c3 bonds. These are bonds that are issued to 501c3 organizations by public entities, and they have a very advantageous interest rate. Making use of the CASA program. CASA stands for the Community Activity Set-Aside program. Those are mortgages that are used for affordable homeownership, allowing community land trusts to make use of those. And finally, studying the tax code and see if there's some sort of different tax classification that we can give to community land trusts to give them recognize that they're an alternative form of ownership, and folks don't realize the full appreciation and valuation at the time in which they're going to realize their equity improvement, similar to the 4D classification that we provide for affordable rental that that we have currently in our tax code. And there was a 4D study last year, and there was some acknowledgement that making use of a 4D type classification for community land trusts might be desirable, but there needs to be some more examination of that idea. So with that, Mr. Chair, who's going to go first? Okay, we're going to have Jeff Washburn.
You were. Who wants to go first?
Oh, you're going to go first? Okay, so we'll have Chip Halbach, who's with Minnesota Housing Partnership.
Mr. Halbach, welcome to the committee.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, Chip Halbach. I'm the Executive Director of Minnesota Housing Partnership. And this is one of a number of efforts that's brought before the legislature to address foreclosures. And, of course, Senator Higgins.
Mr. Halbach, I got to ask you a question because we got a guy here by the name of Cap, and that's his real name. Is Chip your real name?
There were two Chips in the front page of the Star Tribune today. None of them have Chip as a real name, and I'm in that mode, too. My real name's Robert.
Okay.
I never knew that.
So all right. Cap, you're all alone.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead.
All right. I wonder about that, too. Thank you very much. Anyway, our organization is one of many that has been dealing with the issue of foreclosures, and I just want to, as we think about land trust as a response to foreclosures and this legislation in particular, I just want to, again, remind the committee of a couple of the numbers surrounding this issue. First is that this past year there were some 20,000 foreclosures in Minnesota. It's projected to be in 2008 over 30,000, compared to in 2005 the state experienced only a little over 6,000 foreclosures. So That, and then also at the beginning of the fiscal year, or beginning of this year, calendar year 2008, there are some 80,000 households in Minnesota that are behind in their payments. And again, using 2005 as a benchmark for when things started to take off, there were less than a third that number that were behind in their payments. So as you know, with all of the bills addressing foreclosures, it is at the crisis stage in Minnesota as well as other states across the country, and that there's many different ways that this legislature is responding, including the upping the amount that can be used on the foreclosure prevention loan that was just spoken about. But all of that does not get at the vacant properties that are out there. In some 2,500 vacant properties in just Minneapolis and St. Paul alone, there haven't been good counts, so we don't know what's going on in other communities. But the need to treat these vacant properties is one of the most pressing unresolved issues related to foreclosures. And it's a very expensive thing to do. Estimates in Minneapolis run from $25,000 to $75,000 in grant dollars are needed to turn around a property that's been foreclosed and is boarded and vacant, maybe has had the plumbing ripped out, and to make that property repaired and back on the market so a homeowner can acquire it. That's a lot of money per home to be putting into these. But still, in order to preserve and turn around some of these neighborhoods that are really under duress because of the acceleration of foreclosures, the state, federal government, and local governments need to find a role. And the Community Land Trust Program, which Jeff will speak more about, is one way for making a sizable investment in a home coming from the public and being able to retain that investment so it benefits home buyers, subsequent home buyers, so it's not all lost to the first home buyer that comes in and resells their property. So that's what this legislation is about. It's really to say, let's bring together some of the industry experts with legislators and think through this model, this community land trust model, as a good way to invest the state's dollars and other public dollars into these communities that are experiencing so many foreclosures, and do it a way that will help create a new homeowner, but also maintain that investment for subsequent home buyers. So I think it's a conversation that needs to happen, and it's not the only way to go about the vacant homes, but it appears to be a good model and worth spending some public dialogue on. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Washburn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, my name is Jeff Washburn. I'm the director with the City of Lakes Community Land Trust. Our organization is the community land trust that serves the city of Minneapolis. That stated, we're one of eight community land trusts that serve a good portion of the state and the population of the state by different geographic areas. And collectively, over the last 10 years, we've been able to assist over 500 households into permanently affordable home ownership opportunities across the state. I'm going to speak a little bit to our organization, just because I think it's illustrative of the work that all of the counterparts in Minnesota are doing on behalf of assisting low and moderate income households into permanently affordable homes, but also ensuring at that point in time, or at the point in time when those households decide to sell, that we're able to keep those homes affordable for another low income household here in the state. Over the last 3 years, our organization has been able to help 65 households purchase homes in the city of Minneapolis. That's taken a lot of work and, more importantly, a lot of funds. We've been able to, those 65 homes are represented by over $3.2 million in affordability gap assistance. So that's funding from the state of Minnesota through the state finance agency, Hennepin County, the city of Minneapolis, and many neighborhoods have also contributed to this affordability assistance. Over $700,000 of those funds have come from Minnesota Housing, the State Finance Agency. Every year since we've been able to help folks into home ownership, we go back and we assume that what would happen if at the end of the year every homeowner sold their home. And based on what we feel is really good data in Minneapolis, as far as knowing how much homes have gone up or down in the neighborhood, we've been able to figure out within some certainty that if all the homes had sold this last year, December 31, 2007, that we would have increased that affordability investment, that $3.2 million we feel would be now worth $360,000 more, the homes collectively. And 75% of that, which is the case of our community land trust, is the public investment that we're able to, or roughly $270,000, that we've created a new affordability gap. And we're able to take that forward, and if all those homes sold at year end, be able to help more households purchase without the need to come back for additional affordability gap. So as it relates to the foreclosure issues, we feel that we not only are a way to take precious dollars that we need to put into affordable housing, make sure that they help future households, but then also making sure that they help future households in purchasing those homes. The provisions within this bill, I think, all speak to the foreclosure and we feel that the work that the Community Land Trust, as well as other long-term affordability organizations do, would be bettered through the provisions in this bill.
Well, right now we're setting up a working group. And is there an income level that you work with that qualifies for whatever assistance you give them?
Yes. In the case of our organization, it's households that earn less than 80% of median income. In some of the greater Minnesota areas, they do go a bit higher than that. But the focus for both my organization and my counterparts in Minneapolis, I believe the majority of the households we're able to assist actually reside below 50% of metro median income into purchasing homes.
What's median?
Median income, I can tell you what 80% is, which is
go ahead.
77.5.
For a family of four?
For a family of four, that's 100% of median income.
Yeah.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just looking at the land trusts that are listed here, I don't see anything for any smaller size communities, more in the rural areas, where we have a lot of issues with affordable housing in my Bemidji area, especially because of the college there. It looks like, you know, Rochester, Duluth, St. Cloud, some of the larger outstate areas are covered. But is there anything available for smaller rural areas? Is that something your study would look at?
Mr. Hallbeck.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our organization also provides some capacity building support for housing agencies outside of the Twin Cities. And I know that we're providing support to Northern Communities Land Trust, which is officed in Duluth. They want to spread the work that they're doing in the counties, that St. Louis County and the other counties in northeastern Minnesota. And also, I believe the one in the southeast out of Rochester actually does provide some of the community land trust properties are Pine Island, I believe, that are outside of the city itself. And it is something, it's an effort that really did begin in the central cities here in the Twin Cities and up in Duluth, and it's slowly getting out to greater Minnesota and other communities. And I would guess that this committee and task force would, you know, look, because foreclosures and boarded buildings is a statewide problem. It's concentrated in some of the larger community neighborhoods, but we know that some 35% of the foreclosures are actually outside of the Twin Cities area.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just encourage you to whether it says so in your legislation or not, to either add some language or just be aware of trying to be geographically representative when you look at this study?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Two things. One is community land trusts are a fairly new concept. And so they're, you know, they're a new idea that are starting to take root and as Mr. Hallbuck said, spread. Secondly, these are, you know, private nonprofits that are initiated by the energy and the you know, the drive of local people. So, you know, folks in your area are interested in pursuing a land trust, establishing a land trust. You know, I would, you know, I'd encourage you to help spread the idea and encourage them to get active and make that happen. I think, you know, if this study comes back and it sounds like, you know, using 501c3 bonds and the community activity set aside mortgage product and developing this alternative tax classification are good ideas. I think that would do a lot to make community land trusts a lot more viable, give them access to resources that they didn't have previously. So this would be a good thing. But these are the guys to talk to because, you know, they're the pros. Setting up the City of Lakes Community Land Trust was really hard. It took a lot of work and a lot of community conversations and getting a lot of people kind of moving together, getting them, you know, making them savvy to the idea, and then getting a whole lot of folks kind of moving together on the idea at the same time. But Jeff was there at the beginning. He can tell you how to get mm-hmm. locals interested in making it happen.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair. Yeah, it sounds like a really good idea. I know affordable housing is a big problem in my area as well, and maybe in smaller rural communities it might even take several communities banding together to make the administrative costs worthwhile if it's, you know, a relatively small population. But if it is, I'm assuming, is it general fund money that goes into, or where does the money come from to get the ball rolling with these types of things?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Typically, private foundation grants get the ball rolling on these. Okay. And then, but then the resources to actually do, you know, to address the affordability gap, purchase the land, purchase the land, B, you know, get a house built or rehabbed or something, is a combination of sources, and then create the mortgage product that folks access, again, as a combination of funds. They, just like any affordable housing financing, it's, you know, private charitable foundations, corporate community foundations, it's public sources of dollars, and frankly, the individuals are putting their money in as well.
Just, I can add to that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Hallbeck.
Yeah, just to add to what Senator Dibble said, in the way it's gone in rural Minnesota or outside of the Twin Cities is that the land trust effort has really been associated with an existing nonprofit organization. A lot of the land trust property in Southeast was supported through the Community Action Program there, as well as the Rochester Area Foundation, which set up the First Homes Program. And in central Minnesota, it's associated with the regional nonprofit housing group called Central Minnesota Housing Partnership, which has utilized an existing organization which utilized the various resources Senator Dibble mentioned to create a land trust organization.
Senator Olson, plus a couple of senators get appointed to this working group, so if you want to get on it, go ahead and watch out for our trust in rural Minnesota. Any further questions or comments? Senator Quigley?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess you got my wheels turning here. I mean, it seems to me that this would be beneficial to rural communities if you actually started one for agricultural property. It would seem to me it would keep more people on the land and keep rural communities as a much more viable option as places to live than have been the case in the past. So I guess I don't know, it's just a concept that isn't very widespread in the country, at least to my knowledge. I don't know if there are some around the country or not, but.
Mr. Washburn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can only speak to this anecdotally. I know our counterparts in Duluth with the Northern Communities Land Trust have had some discussions with a number of the more the farming communities in northern Minnesota. And I believe nationally there are a number of land trusts that have been able to work with farm and agricultural land trusts, and I'd be very, very, very open to bringing that into the discussion. I think it's a very, very wise thing that we look at that as well.
Senator Dougal.
A little voice in my head says that there is such a concept in Wisconsin, and Wisconsin and Vermont have farm land trusts. So the underlying land is owned in trust, and then folks own the stuff on the land.
Any further comments or questions? Senator Dibble, this has to go to the Senator Rest Committee because it's a working group. So Senator Dibble moves that Senate File 2643, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Local Government. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion is adopted. Thank you very much. Cap, next meeting.
Mr. Chair, members, the next meeting will be Wednesday of this week. We have a few more bills to process. In addition, we are going to try to bring in some of the state agencies to present the governor's budget recommendations with on budgets within this committee's jurisdiction.
We have I think we have an interesting division as far as the governor's recommendation is concerned. I think we're actually spending more money in our division instead of cutting money. So we'll want to take a look at what the governor's recommendations are. So with that, are there any questions of Cap or me or anybody? Seeing none, meeting adjourned.
What are you looking at? On this committee?
Yeah, we didn't get cut.